Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at conair.com and search unbound.
Knowing yourself, maybe that is an ultimate form of self-care. And that's the form of self-care that I've been able to really partake in over the last few years. And that's, you know, get to know yourself. Because if you don't know yourself, you don't know how to take care of yourself. Don't know. Because you don't know what you need.
Week when I'm on the Ginny Show, there's certain questions that I ask my guests. What's their morning routine? What's their definition of happiness? Who are the people that they spend the most time with? This week's guest is Adam King. I met him when I had the pleasure of being on his podcast, The Client Catching Podcast, and I really connected with this guy and wanted to have him on my show too. Now, when I spoke to him about his morning routine and his habits and how he built the business that he had today, what I really found powerful about this story is Adam's morning routines and habits, they don't look like what most people have shared on the Ginny Show. Adam has kind of figured out a way to do his thing amongst whatever life has thrown at him. And being at the Oprah event this weekend, one thing that I learned was that life has a state of flow. And we have to constantly be in that flow and accepting of that flow. It's not every day that we can wake up at 5:30 a.m. and start a morning routine. Some days our bodies may want more sleep. Sometimes we might have a late night or we might have something come up that needs our emergent attention. But that is what life's about. Life is constantly throwing things at us and constantly putting us in situations and bringing up things where we need to find that inner peace and that place of stillness to be able to embrace whatever flow is coming our way. And this is what I particularly love about this conversation I have with Adam, because he talks about just that, adapting and going with the flow of life. So here's this week's guest, Mr. Adam King. Welcome back to the Ginny Show. I love unpacking the joy and the happiness that people cultivate in their own lives. And I love unpacking that wisdom and sharing it with you all today. Joining me on today's show is a lovely Adam King. He's an entrepreneur. He also is a fellow podcaster. I had the pleasure of being on his podcast, Client Catching Podcast, which is a very, very clever show. I encourage you to check it out. Adam, welcome to the Ginny Show.
Hey, Ginny, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show, Adam. I'm super fascinated by what you've set up for yourself. You're obviously joining me from your special shed tin house in your home, which you've repurposed into a little office / podcast studio for yourself. What were you doing before what you're doing now?
As in professionally or
Yeah, or
just before we jumped on here, because just before I jumped on here, I was putting the kids to bed because it's late at night here. So yeah, all that fun and games. But yeah, before, as I say, I was in the fancy shed, which is in the garden. It's actually separate, but yeah, it's brilliant, funny enough, because it's a 30-second commute, you know. Bad weather like it is tonight, even, you know, you can still get wet, but yeah, it still means I get to see the kids. But yeah, before what I was doing now, I was, corporate world, heading up marketing departments. I've been in marketing for just over 16 years now. And I've been doing that for a while. And kind of worked my way up, did, you know, the junior stuff up to management, director level, all that kind of thing. And, you know, did the corporate ladder sort of thing. And yeah, just decided, yeah, I just became unemployable, I think. After a while, it was, I had too many things that I wanted to do and just got frustrated with all the things that I couldn't do. And the business Thing Like a Fish, it actually started as a hobby blog just to get some of my frustrations out about the way that you were sort of having to do things in a job, which you didn't necessarily believe in. So it started as that, and I just kept the name. Yeah, here I am today doing all sorts of different things.
When you were working corporate, Adam, you were saying that there are certain things done in that sort of environment that you don't particularly align or agree with.
I'm curious to know, what was the leadership like in that environment? Because I know from my experience, I mean, I take accountability for, like what you said, I don't think I was very employable because I just wasn't present mentally anyway. I was physically at work, but I don't think I was present there because I wasn't engaged. But I also, I take accountability for my part, but I also noticed the leadership was not the leadership that I personally strive to be in my own company. What were your experiences with leadership
there? Yeah, I'd worked under some good people. One of my early jobs, I still to this day have a memory of one of my bosses who was a fantastic guy. I remember a number of times it wasn't just being inspired by someone that was actually doing the job, but just on a personal level. There were a few times during that sometimes I just needed an arm put around me because he'd noticed that something was going on or knew something was going on. I lost my grandfather, for example, and he knew that was affecting me. And he said one evening, just before we finished, I remember him saying, let's go for a beer. And we just had a chat and that was it. And that to me was good leadership because it was kind of understanding the people that were working for you. Contrast that though to others that I've been under and yeah, it's very, very different. It's interesting. There are different styles and all the rest of it. I think as much as leadership, it's about environment and culture. I think that is, you know, that does come from a leadership style. A leadership style that can be toxic can be very, very destructive for, I think, a business and for the team members involved. And especially ones where a leadership style is all about the leader rather than, you know, leading the team. And those are the kind of environments that have been very, very difficult to operate in. And you see the people that are involved in it, their confidence, you know, smart people, confidence dips, body language dips, everything dips. Nobody's happy to be there. I'm amazed at how that continues in a way. With all the information out there about how to lead and how to inspire and how people aren't robots. You cannot tell them what to do. You have to empower them and allow them to make their own decisions to get the best out of them. I'm not sure I answered your question, I suppose.
You definitely did. I think what you were saying is you gave me two examples of what you perceive to be great leadership and what you perceive to be not great leadership. In my eyes too, when it comes to leadership, just like what you said, there's a ton of resources out there. And I'm a big believer in you set the tone as a leader for your team. So if you set accountability, if you set a certain value or principle set, then you hold them to, you hold yourself firstly to those expectations and values and principles, then you hold your team to that. When I was at that company, that when at my last corporate job, I was like, no, leadership doesn't come from the top. Like, we make our own decisions, but it really does. And I think that's where a leader needs to have the humility to follow, but also the courage to lead. I think it's like a two-way thing. So talk to me about, so you started the blog Think Like a Fish, and now it's kind of become your full-time thing in your shed that you do in the backyard. So yep. Tell me how that grew and how that came about.
Yeah, so as I say, I took the leap, probably at the worst possible time because my wife was pregnant and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I figured that if I don't do it now, I'm never going to. I could see myself being stuck in that place where I'd never really just thought, right, you've got to go. You've got to take the leap. Otherwise, you'll never know. And that whole thing about regret, looking back and you regret the things you didn't do rather than the things you did do. So, yeah, that's what I did. I took the leap. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew what I did. And I enjoyed what I did and I loved what I did. And I just sort of went out there and hung my card up as a consultant, in inverted commas, and yeah, hit my network and did sort of rather, you know, strategy products, really, helping businesses to figure out how they go to market, how they, you know, how they message, how they communicate, the tactics, the channels, all that kind of thing. And they were sort of big projects, which, to be honest, was a lot of work, you know, months and months of work, which wasn't scalable either. Yeah, it kind of then evolved into other things and there was the agency side of things I've done and all that sort of stuff. So it's been an evolution. And that's the beauty of working for yourself. And I think why it's something that I wish I'd done earlier, because you can pivot and you can change and you can do the different things. And yeah, you go down one path and it's good, but you can see another one and you sort of evolve. You don't throw the baby out of the bathwater, but you evolve and all the rest of it until, you know, what I've sort of come to today, which is really an entire sort of methodology based around my own value system in a way. And I guess this maybe flows into your sort of whole leadership idea, which is I believe that you know, great marketing is like great leadership in a way, in that you can't bash people over the head and expect them to buy your stuff, you know, which is like bad leadership or bad management. It's like there comes a point where, you know, people just turn away or just turn off or anything like that. Whereas if you lead people, it becomes more of the sharing of great ideas, the sharing of value and all that kind of thing. And I've sort of encompassed that into an entire sort of framework, which is underpinned by an entire strategy that I call conversational relationship marketing, and put it into an entire methodology of how you simply focus your marketing activities on starting and continuing conversations with effectively a specific group of human beings who you can either add value to, do business with, or collaborate with to open up doors and opportunities for each other. And as a result of that, that is where people are attracted to you, your business, what you do, all that kind of thing. So yeah, that's how I guess the evolution has happened. It's didn't happen overnight, put it that way. But I just think that as you grow, your ideas grow, and as you come in contact with a lot of different people and collaborate and all that kind of thing, you just get exposed to so much collective brilliance in a way. And that's why I love the whole collaboration idea, because you can't do everything on your own.
No, absolutely not. I like what you said there about the conversational aspects of how you reach out to clients and actually build your business. I guess there's a similarity between what you do as an entrepreneur and what I do as an entrepreneur, in the sense that my business is purely built on conversations and communication. I think everyone has a microphone, and I don't mean that literally. I mean, everyone has a figurative microphone in their life. Some people choose to pick up the microphone and create podcasts and have those conversations. Some people prefer to hand that microphone to someone else and say, can you tell my story? Or they look to someone else to tell their story. But I think we all have a figurative microphone. And also some of us use those microphones in private. Some of us prefer a public platform. You kind of do the same thing as well. I'm just very curious about your process, Adam. Tell me about your kind of mindset, because I know that you said your wife was pregnant. That's when you kind of actually took that leap of faith and like, I'm going out on my own. Like you said, it's probably not the best timing in terms of from the security aspect. You had some deep self-awareness about yourself to know, you know what, I know my skill set and I know the value I can bring to others and vice versa. Let's do this. That takes some serious courage.
Or stupidity. And I say that in a kind of tongue-in-cheek way, but maybe it's not. I've kind of always been one of those people that will leap first and worry about consequence later. And that's not always served me well. I've done that, and that's hurt me in ways, and I've done it, and it's come up with. But I think sometimes you forget the negative stuff and you only focus on the positive. I guess if you didn't have that confidence and you didn't have that belief, you'd never take a risk. You'd never try anything different. Yeah, it's one of those things. I guess it took courage, but at the same time, it didn't feel like courage. It just felt like the thing I had to do.
One of the things I'm really exploring this year, Adam, is boundary setting. What are some of your self-care practices that you have daily?
You know what? I'm going to be completely honest and say right now at this moment in my life, I am probably the worst person to ask that question to. And the reason that is because I have a 10-month-old daughter and I have a 3.5-year-old daughter. And that means the majority of any kind of structure, any kind of routine, as much as you can do it with kids and having had Molly, my eldest, we know that that will start to happen later on. But our youngest, it just makes it very, very difficult to have any kind of real structure because we don't sleep very well, right? I was at a mastermind on Monday and there was a lady there who just released a book, Amy Schumacher, big YouTuber anyway, apparently. She was, talking about her book, which is all about morning routines and all the rest of it. And honestly, I was sitting in that crowd going, I hate you. Because all you're saying is you need to get good quality sleep and you need to get, and I'm sitting there going, there's nothing I want more than good quality sleep.
Yeah.
So in that regards, I'm probably the worst person to ask that question to. But at the same time, I am also aware that there are other parts of the day where I'm able to do that. So in the fancy shed, for example, you know, I exercise, got bits and pieces of fitness equipment and got a punch bag that you can, you know, put out at the back and all that kind of thing, just to keep moving. And I have a standing desk and all that kind of thing. And I eat as well as I can and all that kind of thing. So funny enough, it's been one of those things that's on my mind, that self-care thing, because both me and my wife, we are absolutely shattered because both the girls can be up and down in the night, three times each, never at the same time. So sleep is so important. We know that, but God, it's hard sometimes. Yeah. Any parent out there has gone through it. Everyone I talk to that's had young kids and now they've got grown up, they keep saying it does get easier. It does get easier. Yeah, I'm hoping it does. But, you know, there's moments in there where you wouldn't change it. So, yeah, boundary settings, that's on maybe next quarter or next half of the year. Because honestly, sometimes it just takes everything to get out of bed when you've had a night of broken sleep or three nights or a week. And yeah, I'd be interested to know what your boundaries are, and maybe I can get some inspiration. I don't know.
Well, I'll come back to this conversation also, but my boundaries, I'm actually learning to set boundaries. I was raised by two parents with very big hearts that came with a lack of boundaries. They were always generous. They were always there for people in their way, but I didn't learn how to set boundaries. And, you know, that kind of, you know, I guess spills into how, you know, you set boundaries around how much you're giving with your time, with your money, with your generosity, all these sorts of things. For me, what I'm practicing is, and that's just, it comes from self-care, really. I think for me, this year has been a very conscious year of self-care and learning to take care of myself, because I've gone through a lot of changes in the last 4 years, moving countries, going to being a full-time entrepreneur, running my own business. I haven't had that before. So it's a different set of disciplines and routines that I undertake every day. So I wasn't very good at looking after myself too, Adam. There were times where I was waking up a couple times in the night. I wasn't sleeping very well, and I thought I was sleeping well, but I wasn't. And I think you're absolutely right. And I appreciate, going back to what you said, I really appreciate that you were really authentic with what you said. You're like, this is where I'm at now. Like, I don't have the ideal morning routine. You know, I don't get up, meditate, pray, say affirmations and all these things and start my day, but this is how it is. However,
well, I don't know. I do sometimes get up and pray. But
you pray for them to go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think in that retrospect too, even though you can't do it in the morning, what I heard from you was you did make time to do it during the day when you can.
Yeah.
And I think that is still very important. Like, not everyone can have the luxury of a morning routine. It's going to be different. Not every day is the same. So I think I really appreciate that you were honest with that. And you're like, boundaries, we can worry about that after I get self-care down.
Yeah, and at times it really frustrated me. Probably because you are shattered and all the rest of it. But I have come to this place of accepting that this is just a season of my life. It's not going to be forever. I've got to appreciate the good things of it. And I know it's probably sounded like I'm having a good old whinge because, yeah, I am having a bit of a whinge because, you know, that's just what happens when you are very tired. But I know that it will pass. And I know that there will be new challenges that will come along. But at least I understand that there are, I think that's the thing with me. I understand that there are different parts, and I've been through, I'm 40 next month, right? I've got 40 years now of kind of like going through different seasons and all the rest of it. So I know that there's something else that's going to come up, something that's going to happen. Life will be different. Life will look different, but you deal with it and got to kind of look at it still as a bit of an adventure along the way. Otherwise you would go a little bit mad. The worst thing I can think about is being bored, and I'm not bored. Far from it.
I'm curious to know too, Adam, I just shared with you a couple of things that I learned from my parents about boundaries. What is the biggest lesson that you've learned from your parents? You can pick whichever parent you like or both. What's the biggest lesson you've learned from your parents, and how do you apply that to your life?
I'm going to say that's a tough one because I lost my mom about nearly 3 years ago now, and she was 59. And I guess the thing that I learned from my mom, she had multiple sclerosis most of her adult life. And from a child, I remember her being mobile. And gradually is, you know, this is an example of the seasons of life and how I see things changing and knowing that nothing stays the same, right? And I saw her, as I grew up, she got less mobile. It went from having a stick to having a walker to having a wheelchair to completely bedbound. And she was strong. Like, she was so strong. She never moaned. She never complained. She never said, woe me, why does this happen to me? She got up every day. Eventually, you know, that was with help. And I just learned that it doesn't matter what life throws at you, you kind of got to make the most of it. she always believed in me. She always said, I believe in you and all the rest of it. And the hardest thing that has ever happened to me really is by the time we realized what was happening, I wasn't able to hear that again. That makes sense. So yeah, it was one of those, it was incredibly hard. And I watched her, you know, pass away in front of me for 8 days, did not leave that room. And in a way, that is the most valuable thing, or the most valuable gift I have been given at the same time, because I was able to help her through that in whatever way I could. It's a weird thing. It's the worst thing I've had ever gone through. Yeah. But in a way, it's also the thing that I will always treasure, because she raised me. She raised me from a time when I don't remember being small and helpless. At least I was able to repay some little part of that by helping her at the end.
Wow. A little bit teary there when you said that, Adam, because I thought of my mother as well, because she, over the past 10 years, I've watched her go from slowly walking to a walking frame to a wheelchair to now being completely bedridden. And, you know, she also raised me. I was raised by her single mother. And
yeah,
when you see this woman who's so strong, who's always walking around cooking curries and taking a really huge caretaker of you and any siblings, I had an older sibling. And then that change, and you're like, it just happens so quickly that you don't realize. And absolutely, it does kind of reaffirm certain things to really make the most of every day.
You know, the strength that I saw in her for as long as I can remember, could never complain about things after watching her go through that. Gradually losing mobility, gradually going through everything that you got. And MS is a cruel, cruel disease. She actually passed away from cancer. It wasn't caused by the MS, but you could argue maybe it was a, you know, contributing factor or whatever. But what, you know, it is the cruelest thing to see, because it's a slow burner. I mean, she was diagnosed at 24, I think, 26. And it was a gradual thing. And it's horrendous to watch. Yeah, if you see that, and you've got to be grateful for everything when you watch someone that you care about so deeply having to struggle day in, day out. Doesn't matter what stuff, you know. So my complaints about not sleeping, I've suddenly, you know, that's how I get through it in a way. It's like, well, you've got nothing to complain about, buddy. Remember what your mum did. Like it really is. It's one of those. And again, in a way, teaching a lesson, but in a way, my mum was a great leader, because she led by being who she was, not letting it show how much she struggled, because I know she did. But she still did everything as much as she could for us for as long as she could. You know, you literally had to force her to slow down, and it's inspiring.
Definitely is the fact that, you know, it really did impact your perspective. You know, I think about it too sometimes. You know, I complain sometimes and I think I've got so much to be grateful for. I have all my senses. I can create and design my day the way that I want. There's so much to be grateful for. So that perspective really is key.
The Genie Show. The Genie Show. Our lonely days are gone.
Other than your wonderful attitude, Adam, and your perspective that you have, I'm curious to know, do you have any affirmations or meditation or spiritual practice that you do? Or do you just go back and think of your experiences and you're like...
Again, I couldn't claim that I have an actual practice, again, for part of the reasons. I did. I had a good morning routine previously and the previous life and all the rest of it. But I read, I listen to podcasts. I get a lot of things that way. I'm quite a fan of Stoicism. Maybe that is a big reason why, you know, the whole... Ryan Holiday, that's his name, wrote a book called The Obstacle is the Way. And that for me is kind of like, it sums up the whole Stoicism idea. It's like the only way is through. You cannot experience life without experiencing the pain or the challenge or the struggle, because then it's just a bit vanilla. If that makes sense. And there's another book that he's written. It's called The Daily Stoic. And there's one thing that I do is I read that. They're very short chapters, you know, a page long. And it sort of, you know, brings something from some of the old sages, Marcus Aurelius, those kind of guys. And then gives an example about modern day life and all that kind of thing. And just reading that little bit sometimes each day, and it's daily, you know, daily. So yeah, sometimes that helps, because sometimes you can just wake up and feel a bit rubbish. Yeah. It happens. That whole idea of the Stoicism thing, it did appeal to me. Maybe, I mean, I picked up that book just around the time that I described, and yeah, maybe it maybe it helped and more than I realized, I don't know. But if there is anything, it's kind of that. And I'd love to have a practice or something like that, but I'm not necessarily the greatest at sticking to those sorts of things. I was diagnosed as an adult with ADHD, for example. That explained a lot, put it that way. But yeah, I realized I've been compensating for that sort of thing all my life. But then it just went, I get it. Now I don't mind it. I quite like it. I mean, you might hear with the way that I talk, I ramble, I go off in different directions. I used to apologize for it. Now I think, well, actually, it helps me form thoughts and get to places where I never thought I could get to. And with what I do, it really helps me. It's almost like the Library of Congress, and you don't have an index card to know where any book is, right? That's how my mind works. But you start to see patterns in all sorts of things that you couldn't necessarily put together, but somehow my brain does. It just sometimes takes me a little while to get there.
Absolutely. I actually think ADHD is just a more aware, outward and diagnosed process of what everyone goes through. Who was it? Eckhart Tolle says we have how many tens of thousands of thoughts a day? I don't want to quote the incorrect number, but, you know, obviously someone with ADHD has those thoughts, but that's how you process. We unconsciously process thoughts every day. There's stuff going on in our subconscious, which I just think it's just louder. I think we all, to an extent.
Absolutely. Everybody has the same things. And it's one of those things when I talk, I'm open about it. I don't hide it. I think it's good to be, you know, to help people be aware of it and all the rest of it. Cause it's not, I see it as my superpower now. I don't see it as a hindrance, because I think the name is, first of all, not the best name, because it's not inattentive. It's not, you know, attention deficit. It's actually attention. What's the right, probably a better word, not attention deficit, but too much, for want of a better word. It's like you pay attention to everything. You can't filter anything out. It's like I have to walk around with headphones in, for example, if I'm walking down the street, because I'm just paying attention to everything, and I'd probably end up like walking into the road if I was paying attention to everything. It's kind of like, yeah, I had Dr. Ned Halliwell explains it really well. It's like having a Ferrari brain but bicycle brakes. It's like you can go, but then you just can't stop, because you don't have the ability to sort of, you know, or it's like driving in the rain without wipers. It's like you just can't see through everything. And it's a funny thing, but I beat myself up for years thinking there was something broken about me. And then I got this, funny enough, it was my mum who I was on the phone to, and I was talking about what was going on, and I was struggling with something. I can't remember. And she just flippantly on the phone just said, yeah, but probably you've been ADHD all your life. And I went, what the hell is that? That helped me sort of, you know, look into it. And yeah, as it was, since then, it's just been totally different. At least I now know, and I know I have things that I put in place. So when you talk about boundaries and structure and all the rest of it, now that is hard for me, because I needed that. I structure my days, my work days. Like I time block everything, right? I have specific things I do at specific times. Otherwise, I just drift. Yeah. I wouldn't have known that without that sort of idea about what the ADHD does. And there are times when, yeah, I need to back off. I know when I'm at my highest energy, when I'm not, all that kind of stuff. So when my brain is firing, it's good. When it's not so easy. Again, it's kind of like knowing yourself. Maybe that is an ultimate form of self-care. And that's the form of self-care that I've been able to really partake in over the last few years. And that's, you know, get to know yourself. Because if you don't know yourself, you don't know how to take care of yourself. Don't know, because you don't know what you need.
One thing that I'm learning about you, Adam, and I think add this to your superpower list, you seem to have a very natural gift of coming for placements in a completely unsurrendered way. Like you seem to be really good at accepting things. It's amazing.
Yeah, there are some things that I can't accept or find difficult to accept or anything like that. So yeah, I'm as fallible as every single one of us human beings walking on this planet. I think I'm just I don't know. I don't bullshit myself. And I think that I have been guilty of that in the past. And that's ultimately been the worst thing. Like, I don't walk around with my eyes closed. My eyes are wide open. And I like to think that I see things how most of the time they are. I don't get involved in, I think, again, that's why I didn't enjoy the corporate world. The office politics drove me mad. It's like, it just doesn't, I don't understand it. Like, why are you wasting your time and your energy on this when actually you should just be doing the work? We've got people that are paying for what we are offering. So why aren't we doing that rather than petty, you know, one-upmanship and all that kind of thing? Maybe it's the stoic thing, and maybe it's that I'm kind of like quite a logical thinker. I kind of accept things when I can understand them logically, but I think the weakness is when it comes to the emotional side of things, I block them out, and that's the thing that I do. And then they'll surface and I don't know how to handle them, which is a hard thing to, because they come out in your worst moments. And yeah, it's one of those. It's a funny one. It really is. But there's good sides and bad sides to every human trait, I think is the word.
Yeah. Emotions especially are sometimes hard to understand. They can be really deep, and you may have experienced that emotion many, many times, and you may not understand it because you've blocked it down so many times. So I completely hear you on that, and learning when you block it, and it does eventually come out in certain ways. It's literally like stuffing things down. We're not a bottomless pit, humans, where there's this, it'll bubble up in some way, shape or form if we don't deal with it. But what you were saying too about, you know, you find yourself just as human, and it's also, I hear you that this is also why I didn't like office politics. I'm like, why are we focusing on this? Like, it's not about the, I know people aren't arguing about the coffee machine being clean. There's so many more layers to this argument, but we'll bring their personalities to work with them.
Yeah, it's when you end up having an argument with the important person in your life, and it's never about the thing. It's always something deeper. It always is, because no one cares about the washing up that much.
That's so true. So true, Adam. Adam, tell me, what is 2020 going to be the year of for you?
Funny enough, when I was thinking about it, I actually did think this is going to be the year of self-care. And that was, like, this is ironic considering the conversation we've had. But I think now it's more, 2020 for me is a year of growth. And I think I've got to a point, well, you know, as I say, I'm 40 next month. And I think it's time for me to grow into that, if that makes any sense. I'm not saying I grow into being 40. I'm saying I think I've had so much going on for the last really 3.5-4 years that I haven't really grown myself in a way. I've grown a business. I've grown my skills. I've grown all sorts of things. But I still feel like I'm 4 years ago sometimes. So it's like, how do I grow out of that into the next version of myself, if that makes any sense?
Makes perfect sense.
I haven't got the answer for it.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of thinking that's where I want to be.
It's a new decade for you too. It's a new decade for all of us. It's a new decade.
Absolutely.
So no, I hear you with that. And I can totally resonate with that too, because I felt through looking back at my last 5 years, feel that I have grown a business. I've grown a team. I've expanded my horizons to an extent, but in terms of personal development, even though there has been some, there are areas that I felt that this year that it's okay priority for me this year as well. And I just find it so fascinating, like interviewing different people from all you know, shapes and all walks of life, and you achieve so many things, but yet you put the self-care element, oh, so I've done all of that, and now just let me look after myself. It's interesting how we don't do that first.
It is. I think because we can run so fast sometimes, and it can suddenly take off, and all of a sudden it's like when you're a kid and you run down a hill and your legs just cannot keep up.
Yeah.
At some point, if you don't somehow either get to the bottom before you fall or manage to slow down, you are going to go splat on your face. And I think that's a great analogy for self-care, because if we're constantly running down a hill, we're either going to fall flat on our face or we're going to hit the bottom so fast, it's just going to hurt anyway, rather than actually thinking, right, if I'm going to do this, I need to be able to find a hill that isn't going to run away from me, or at least get somebody to put some crash mats at the bottom or something. I don't know. Or maybe I should do it in a Zorb. That's maybe the ultimate self-care for that analogy. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that is. That's an amazing analogy of self-care. I think you're absolutely right there. We are constantly running, especially in this rabbit hole that we're in at the moment with social media and very easy just to let our legs take us and our minds take us wherever it needs to. It's so very true. Adam, I really love this conversation with you. I think I've learned so much more about you. Thank you so much for sharing time with me on this show. And I think we need to have you back. I think we've just touched the tip of the iceberg. Very deep.
Nice. Well, thank you very much. It's a very different conversation to ones that I'm normally having. So I don't always get to go into these sorts of things. So yeah, I really appreciate the questions and yeah, the opportunity to, just to chat really. It's always nice.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Adam. Thanks for joining me on The Genie Show.
Thank you very much. Speak to you soon. The Genie Show. Oh, how long it takes, I've
gone on. Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at Conair.com and search Unbound.